You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Pacifica Radio, and welcome to Poets Cafe.
Yeah, welcome to another edition of Poets Cafe right here on KPFK, Pacifica Radio 4, Los Angeles, 90.7 on your FM dial. And that's what you're plugged into, right?
That's right. Still here after all these years.
Oh, really, man. And I'm going to be your host. My name is Ford, first name Michael, middle initial C.
He's known as MC.
Yes, MCF. Let's make it easy.
It's better than MF.
Of course. I'm so lucky to a real treat for me today be co-hosting with one-fourth of a surrealistic comedy quartet most of you will remember as the Fire Sign Theater.
That's right.
And basically, it's really welcome, Phil.
Welcome back.
Sitting across the table.
Yeah, this was our second home. Yeah. Because our first home was the original KPFK studios further down Ventura Boulevard somewhere, lost in the mists of history. And I became associated with it because I'd gone to Yale with Peter Bergman.
Yeah.
And I connected up with him again here in Los Angeles when I came out with Brandon DeWilda and Peter Fonda. It's a long story. It'll be in my memoirs, Where's My Fortune Cookie, which I hope will come out at some point. But in any event, I reconnected with Bergman after having worked with him at Yale, where he wrote the lyrics for two musicals that I starred in, written by Austin Pendleton, Booth Is Back in Town and Tom Jones, right? Tom Jones. And I discovered he was the Wiz on The Wizard of Oz on Radio Free Oz, which was this late-night call-in counterculture talk show at KPFK. And he invited me down to play, and that's where I met David Osman, who was in town trying to persuade for Peter to do a show about the Indians, Hopi Indians, right, which he succeeded in doing, and Phil Austin, who at that time was, I think, the drama editor for the station.
He was the dramaturge for KPFK.
Something like that. Yeah. Right. And we discovered that we were all fire signs.
Yeah.
I'm a Leo. Peter's a Sagittarian. David's a Sagittarian. Phil is an Aries. And we started improvising together and found that we had this crazy knack for play and for put on more than anything else, inspired by the goon shows and other kinds of crazy surrealistic comedians. And we found our voice on KPFK radio. And then later we moved to this studio space where we did a documentary called The Martian Space Party to raise money for the station. And then we went off campus to the Magic Mushroom, which was a club. Still exists. It has some other name now, but it still exists down there on Ventura Boulevard. And we did a kind of
as another venue.
As Radio Free Oz. It was Radio Free Oz, but it was live. Right. We interviewed, we had musicians on like Mama Cass and David Crosby and you name it. It was really a precursor to Prairie Home Companion. It was a surrealistic version of Prairie Home Companion.
Right. Well, that was my connection.
Mine
was June 1969, and it was at this site.
Mm.
And that's when I met David Osman.
At that point, this was a site for sore eyes, if you remember.
Yeah, right.
it was pretty much an open space.
Yeah, right.
And it wasn't honeycombed with all these wonderful little studios and things now.
Your first, you were earlier than me, like right, it had to be around 1968 or something.
67.
Right? 60, okay.
Yeah.
It was like you were guesting on Oz in a
That's
sense.
That's right.
And doing fire sign material
with
these guys by then.
Yeah. What happened was we were all guesting on Oz.
Right.
Or ghosting, if you will. We were ghost actors and ghost players and ghost writers. And we discovered that we had an entity, and Bergman was absolutely convinced we were going to become the Beatles of comedy. And of course, all this was, again, before Monty Python, before Saturday Night Live. We really were pioneers in creating, well, first of all, a long-form recording technique.
Did you guys ever play the Avalon or the Fillmore for Bill Graham?
No, I don't think I. You know, frankly, I can't remember. We played so many places.
Yeah, I just thought maybe because there was a comedy kind of really noisy comedy group called Congress of Wonders.
Oh, yes. I remember
I always thought of them as being the Rolling Stones of comedy, and you guys were kind of Three Dog Night
Yeah, or the Beatles, because we were inspired by the Beatles. We used to listen to their records when they came out and go, oh, man, oh, how can we do this like with comedy and drama, you know, and music?
Right.
How can we integrate it all together?
That was the fantasy.
Yeah. So if people don't know Firesign Theater, you can go to our website, firesigntheater.com. If you don't know Phil Proctor, you can go to planetproctor.com and listen to our material and, you know, and get hooked.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just going to – shall we start – getting poetic?
I think since this is Poets Cafe, we might as well. And let's remind people, no charge for the second cup.
Oh, good.
So
good.
Something by David Osman might be
appropriate. I'm going to read from David's new book, A Collection of Poetry, Marshmallows and Despair, which is available to you on Neo Poesis Press. Neo Poesis Press. Figure it out, folks.
What's the geography on that? Where is that?
Where is it? Neo Poesis? Yeah. I think it's in your head. What does it say here? It's in Seattle. Seattle, Washington.
Oh, okay.
David lives up on Whidbey Island.
He does, indeed.
Okay. And the reason that we're going to kick off with David is that he brought the poetic instinct to the Firesign Theater.
Yeah.
All of us had poetry in our background. All of us were lyricists in a way as well. But he was the one that opened the door for us to be able to bring in our own poetry and integrate it into our radio shows. If you want to hear the result of that, we are actually on the air 24/7, Firesign Radio. You can Google that, Firesign Theater Radio.
And it's constantly streaming.
Yeah, constantly streaming.
Oh, wow.
And also, there's a book out called Duke of Madness Motors, which you can get at our website.
Yeah.
It has 82 hours of our original radio shows on it. Okay. Now, here's what David writes about this. Who am I anyway? How can a poet be in two places at once? Easy. On the radio. I began broadcasting poets and poetry in 1960. In the early 70s, I bought found poems to the table for the other three Firesign Theater members, and we transformed them into improvised performances. There are audio poems in each of Firesign's many comedy albums. I've always been a political poet, and these newsworthy poems have reached the world quickly over the airwaves. And I'd like to read you one now called Home in America, November 2010. Goodbye, America. Home of the muscle car, home of the gun. Goodbye, America, home to dismemberment. We saw 3D and Postal 2, too. Home of the full body scan, yet home to secret money that buys the faithful's fears. America, bigots ran you for years. The once upon a time princes got born, shot, and died. The colonels and pop stars tried to run you, but the gun makers won. So the spies ran you for the billionaires, and by Iowa golly, billionaires let the nobodies take over. So nobody runs you now, and the muscle car nation blows a valve, dismembers the drive shaft, flattens the tires, closes the schools, goes postal with prisons, drives home on the rims, has a drink and sits in the car till we're dead. We being America. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Good voice, huh?
Joe David Osman. You know, and it goes back a ways from me. I remember him doing the interviews with poets in the Sullen Arts.
The Sullen Arts.
Published by Corinth in 1963.
And I think he just did a new edition of it as well.
Well, yeah, he did. And this, of course, is the first edition of it. And and he wrote in it in 1974. He wrote for me, and he said, "It's been 11 years and the poets have won."
Yeah.
And I said, "David, won what?"
Yeah, you know, won, and, won, right.
And along about 1971, I was moved to create a slender poetry anthology called 12 Poets.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed to raise money for the Patchen Surgery Fund to pay for Kenneth Patchen's hospital trips and these gruesome operations that he had to go through. Huh. And
they were patching him up, huh?
They were indeed. They were. He was patched.
Wow.
Patchen was patched, and we were helping to pay for it. with this anthology.
So you're gonna
and all the proceeds went to the surgery
that's
fund.
That's wonderful.
So
I'm going to read one from that now.
David was one of the first ones I called, and he created this poem. You know, he lived on a road that was going off away from Alvarado.
Yes.
And it was a rise up, and he called the road a river. And he called the road a river, and he called the little, his neighborhood a village called Mixville. So he called it.
Right.
So this is called, appropriately, Mixville poem. We decided to set up something like, or something we like, to call a city around here, on the banks, both banks of the river. Not that that's a river exactly. We like to call it a river. David called it that first, I think. David built his house near mine, on this bank, the east bank, soon after we had got the land cleared and the indigenes had left. And all of them were named John, which is strange, because David and I have the same name too. But it wasn't called the river until much later. David Osman.
That's very nice.
And it's a perfect with the whole Mixville idea.
Yeah, and the sense of the Indian nation, because David was very involved in the Hopi revelations.
So was the essence of the village, the tribe, all of that.
And I'm going to read a poem now, which in a strange way seems to be allied with that. This is something I wrote a long time ago.
Oh, you're going to read something you wrote. Oh,
yeah,
good.
Okay. Wolves in bags. I awoke to find the dream still with me. I remember that I came across an anesthetized wolf in a canvas bag. I was wary of him. I carefully dragged him to the staircase in the hall and threw him quickly over the side. I heard the thunk of his body. I tried to make him land on his head, but failed. In closing the door, I discovered that the door was... I discovered that I was in a movie set. In a set, anyway. The Merv Griffith Show was on, almost like a telethon, on the air for 24 hours, so people could be safe together. Because the wolves outside, hungry because the winter had been so severe, starving, actually, because the hungry wolves were outside. And I couldn't close the doors against them because it was a movie set. So I woke up. I woke up to find the dream still with me, and I heard the wolves howling outside. That was a dream that I really had.
Phil Proctor.
Phil Proctor.
Okay. We're still at KPFK, 90.7. It's Pacifica Radio, and this is Poets Cafe.
Poets Cafe.
You know, we were talking about Patchen a little while ago, and I thought maybe backing up a little bit, and certainly his influence on my early life was monumental. And I thought, just to give people a sense of what Patchen sounded like,
sure.
I thought I would read something,
please.
Take advantage of this and read something called May I Ask You a Question, Mr. Youngstown Sheet and Tube. And of course, Kenneth championed the underdog, and he was very concerned about growing up in where the mill workers were and where they were striking, and the National Guard coming over and poking gun barrels in their faces.
Oh,
and so Patchen was writing about that, very, very concerned about the combination of the family life and the life of the workers. So this poem really addresses that. Mean, grimy houses. Shades drawn against the yellow-brown smoke that blows in every minute of every day and every minute of every night. To bake a cake or to wash clothes with the taste of tar in your mouth. To have a baby or to have a funeral with the taste of tar in your mouth. Bedrooms gray dim with the rumor of old sweat and urine, pot roast, boiled spuds, an issue of Ranch Romances on the table, and the bleeding heart of our dear Lord on the wall. The kids come on like the green leaves in springtime, but I'm not spry anymore. And the missus, she do lose the bloom from her soft cheek. But a Saturday night then, in Tim O'Sullivan's elite tavern itself, it's a world of sadness we live in, Mickey, me boyo. Aye, that it is. And better we drink to that. Well, it's this one more, for home is where I should be now. Aye, but where's the home for the soul of a man? Ah, it's a frail woman you're talking like, me Mickey. Sure and de Garrett be a dumb goose who doesn't have a tear to shed this night. Rain dripping down from a rusty eave spout into the grey, fat cinders of the mill yard. The day shift goes on in 4 minutes. Kenneth Patchen.
Oh, that's just great, isn't it? The music of passion. Smells.
Oh, everything is there.
The characters. It's just beautiful. It's like a little short movie.
It almost is. Yeah, it's a miniature film. A miniature verbal film.
I really think that that's one of the powerful points of poetry, is that it can evoke a mood and a time and a picture. It stimulates your imagination and your senses in a short burst, you know, that you can carry in your heart and
yeah,
in your head.
Exactly.
All right. Here's,
now, do you have anything by Phil Austin?
I do. That's the next thing I'd like to read.
Because we're talking Firesign People and the whole
Patchen. Yeah, you know, we lost Peter Bergman about 4 years ago to leukemia, and then we lost Phil almost 2 years ago now. He lived up on Fox Island near Tacoma, where his dear wife Una still lives. And we lost him to a similar kind of cancers, terribly unexpected losses both times.
Cancer is a thief.
It is. And I went up there to his home, and I went through boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff that was related to Firesign Theater, because Phil was our producer. He was our online producer, and he saved everything. He saved everything. Yeah. I was astounded.
Ideas, everything.
Oh, well, when we would do an album, all of the correspondence between him and the producer, the money people, the record company, the other people we were working with, the musicians, you name it, all that stuff was there. So, I came across some of his work, his like this very light leaf paper, you see?
Oh, yeah. Remember this? I love the sound of that.
Yeah, this is like copy paper.
When you go to a poetry reading, you actually see people reading off their cell phones.
Yeah, I know.
And which is insulting.
This is reality right here.
Well, there it is.
Right, okay. So here, this is called Recipe, and this is, to me, vintage Phil Austin. Oysters, Kansas City style. Take a dozen fresh oysters to the Cattlemen's Hotel Bar in Kansas City. Get them drunk on branch water and bourbon. Load them in a cab and tell the driver to take them back to their hotel. You will need 1 dozen fresh oysters unshelled, a 3-piece suit, string tie, brown Stetson hat, stockman's boots, and cab fare.
Perfect.
Isn't that perfect?
Yeah.
That's Phil's mind right there. And, you know, and he was actually a prolific writer and wrote a lot of stuff, Tales of the Old Detective. Again, you can get Phil Austin's material at firesigntheater.com as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
text, you mean? You can actually get printouts?
They're books. He put out books. He put out spoken books, audio books.
But he did a solo album called Roller Maidens from Outer Space.
Yes, he did. And then he and David collaborated on In the Next World, You're on Your Own.
I love the way we finish each other's sentences. We've known each other a couple of years.
Really? A few years.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. So that's just a teeny sample of his extraordinary prolific writings.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you a question. What was the first poem you ever wrote? Can you remember?
Yeah. I was at Audubon Junior High School.
Mm-hmm.
A geography teacher was given the assignment by the principal to do an arc of poetry, someone who knew absolutely not, didn't have a clue what poetry was, except Evangeline by Longfellow, and she would pace the room, roll her eyes like marbles, and read.
Orate, probably, right?
Oh, my God. It was like I ended up despising poetry. I thought it was the worst thing I'd ever had to deal with. And then we had to memorize poems that did not address themselves at all to what we were
your life
in the 1950s thinking about. So it was just a miserable experience for me. So one of the assignments was to write a poem. And the only thing we knew, the only thing we were fed were rhyme schemes. So I thought all poems like a song lyric, you know, it would rhyme. Only, and I decided people were writing poems like My Car and My Goldfish and My Room and all this. And I decided, you know, we'd finished dealing with the Korean War. And I thought I would write a poem called Korean War.
Wow.
And I wrote this doggerel, you know.
Ruthlessly.
I barked out this poem that if I can, I can vaguely remember it. It was something like, let us leave the bombers, their bellies filled with death. Let us leave the saber jets, their fire, their spitting flame as breath. And then I said, let us turn to that gigantic angel of mercy, helping the army survive. That gigantic angel of mercy, the helicopter Sikorsky H-5. And if you remember, those were the choppers you saw on the opening of MASH.
Yes.
In the Korean
War. Yeah, with the two rotors.
Which was about,
the
Korean War.
That's great.
So, well, the teacher gave me a D-.
Said, oh, come on.
That's violent. It's very violent. And I said, well, you're right. War isn't violent at all. It's cuddly and funny and cute.
Fuzzy and warm.
Yeah. And so there again, another miserable experience. I said, I will never look at a poem again. Three years later, I'm at the LA Jazz Concert Hall. Kenneth Rexroth comes in and reads his elegy to Dylan Thomas.
Oh.
Patchen came in. They were both my teachers. Rexroth and Patchen were my teachers when I was from the age of 18 to 22, I guess, something like that. So I was lucky enough to have that epiphany.
You got hooked like a rope.
I said, whoa, wait a minute.
That's poetry.
That's modern poetry. I said, well, why didn't they? Why weren't they teaching that?
Yeah.
Why were they? Yeah. I think that's a good case in point to what's going on in schools right now.
It's a wonderful parallel.
Including MFA programs in colleges.
Mm-hmm.
You have teachers who are rooted in the British tradition.
Yeah.
And a lot of cases. There are a few that I call spies in the enemy camp. You know, they're teaching writing, and there are a couple.
The same thing happens. The whole English tradition has affected us so very greatly. When you think about it, I mean, here's a listener-supported station here in, you know, KPFK. And the fact is that if you look at the programming of most of the television programs, they're English stuff, right? The main tradition, even for our television programming, murder mysteries and what have you, you know.
My old lady can't even listen to it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Now, speaking of foreign things, first of all, I'll give you my first poem. Same thing. I was in high school, but I had a great English teacher, Arnie Groningsater was his name, and he just assigned a poem. He said, write a poem to us. I'd never really written one before, and I still remember it. I am I think and feel and see, and why, I ask, must it be that you, as you, are just as free to say, go screw yourself to me. That was my first poem.
And an internal rhyme thing happening, too.
Yeah, it just sort of came out of me, you know.
Well, since we're dealing with rhyme scheme, this goes right back to to a second piece by Phil Austin. From 1973 to 1983, I published and edited a magazine called The Sunset Palms Hotel.
Ah.
I'll hold it up to the microphone so people at home can
folks?
See it.
Got some nice graphics
and,
on it.
Yeah, and so I asked Phil, and he sent me his doggerel, and I can read it, the exact poem that was published.
Great.
It goes like this. I thought I'd like to write a poem about Franz Kafka's hat. But instead, I think I'll write about Robert Kelly's cat. And, of course, Robert Kelly is the poet in residence at Bard College.
Yep, yep.
Not only mentor to Philip Austin, but he was also teaching Lou Reed before the Velvet Underground and Donald Fagen before Steely Dan.
Well, I certainly remember
he was teaching those guys.
He was a bear man.
So
he
man. It's no surprise that those guys were sharpening their songwriting tools in that classroom. So that was that was Philip Austin's contribution.
And the other contribution, I don't know if it happened to you, was because I'm a linguist, I'm a polyglot, which is a wonderful gift from God. And so I learned some poems by Jacques Prévert and poems, a Russian poem. And since I know that there's a multilingual audience out there, I think I'll start with the Pushkin poem, which is called, it doesn't matter what it's called, it's in Russian.
You're going to read it.
I'm going to recite it right now, from memory. Не пой красавицы при мне эти песни грузи печальны. Напоминают мне они другую жизнь бергдальны. Увы, напоминают мне твои жестоки напеви, и степь, и ночь, и при лунье черты далеки бедной деви. Я, призрак милый раковой, тебя увидев, забиваю. Но ты поешь, и пред мной я вновь обрежаю. Isn't that beautiful?
We really should have our own program where we could call it. Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
Well, yeah.
And I could translate it for you, but I don't think it really matters.
No. Well, I thought...
it's about a gypsy singing a song that makes some guy remember a beautiful girl that he knew, and it's like a phantom that comes back to haunt him because it's a lost love.
Maybe I can play off of this a Russian by reading something I wrote... I hadn't intended to read anything of my own, but it follows your Russian. There is no such thing as a good loser in Russian roulette. Players are assembled in groups of 4 million, loser lovers undercover. There is muted shadow. We see the reckless bet a summer moon makes with mindless gamblers scattered and damaged in date rape rooms of the American heart. Just as gamble of single entities is rejected by our winning numbers, we turn into crude slot machine romantics in vanquished territories north of our divorce from patriotic murder and the steel solitude of Cold War bomb shelter paranoia. Tourist high rollers are planning their crapshoot crash out, computerized by boring game boards of love and punishment. Some players are excited by the rumors of reckless conquest. Where girls are broken chess pieces who have been recently rearranged like a row of bombed palm trees, and we are the players in this game of red Chinese checkers, discovering life can be difficult on easy street. Please do not try to convince me that good old Uncle Sugar won't get jumped. And
try this at home, folks.
Don't do any heavy lifting after that. Our in studio clock is starting to melt down like Salvador Dali's watch. Phil Proctor, it's been a pleasure having you.
It's been great reconnecting with you. Words.
Poets Cafe shutting down its doors. And I want to thank Marlena Bond for turning the knobs, a production in the booth in there, and Lois P. Jones for maintaining a safe haven for something just a little bit different, the Poets Cafe programming. So it's been so long.
Let's do it again.
So long, everybody.